out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Friday the 23rd of November 2018 and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, I just thought I'd begin today by letting you in on something. I found this quite funny actually. One of the misanthropic leftists that have been attacking us recently and telling all sorts of nonsense about us, really, making all sorts of allegations. Well, they made an allegation the other day. They called Radio Arian the radio home of the world's worst Nazis, which I thought was pretty funny. I thought maybe we might use this, actually, the radio home of the world's worst Nazis. But it did make me think, I think we are pretty decent people. I think us here, us hosts at radioarian.com and our listeners, I think the people that know us think that we are decent people, good people that are concerned about what's going on in our countries and in our nations, the sort of people that people would love to have as neighbours and friends, to be honest, honourable people, loyal people who keep their word, God-fearing people. And it leads me on to thinking about platonic love. And platonic love is the highest form of love that there is. That's what it's known as. It's the love that you have for your friends, the love that you have for your family, the love that you have for your nation. It's a love that is not based on any individual gratification. It's not based on sex, basically. It's a much higher form of love than sex. It is the highest form of love of all, is platonic love. And that's what nationalists have. That's what we have for our nation. And what an indictment of the world today, where the people that love their nation, that have this form of platonic love, and that show this love, and are prepared to show it, are then called the world's worst Nazis for doing so. We really do live in an inverted world where good gets called evil and evil gets called good. Well, today I was going to talk a little bit about Jews. Somebody dropped by the chat room the other day and they said, could I make a podcast explaining how Jews fit into the problems we face as nationalists? He said he actually had problems with finding this out on the site. There wasn't anywhere that was really devoted to this. And I think a couple of years back, we used to talk about Jews all the time. But since then, there's been more problems caused by Muslims. And we end up talking about the Muslim problem just as much, really. And to a lot of people that are just coming into this, they can't actually see how the Jews fit in, because what they see going on, they see grooming gangs. They see accusations of Islamophobia. They see the black crime wave in the cities and the black and white crime. And they don't see any Jews carrying out any crimes against us. In actual fact, the only time they hear about Jews is when the Labour Party and the left are accused of being anti-Semites. And we're obviously not part of the left. And I would argue that we're not part of the right either. We are the centre ground. We're based on ethnicity and preserving the race and preserving the nation, rather than any artificial division like left or right. I mean, whatever is best for the nation on the right, we would advocate for. Whatever is best for the nation on the left, we would advocate for. That's why we have National Socialism, which is a mix of nationalism and socialism. So how do the Jews fit into this? Well, we can go right the way back, and we can go right the way back to biblical times, or at the birth of Christianity, and in Judea at that time. The Jews weren't the tribe of Judah from the Old Testament. The Jews at that time, the term itself was Judean. It wasn't a racial term. It was just meant that you were a citizen of Judea. And the citizens of Judea, it was a were multicultural. It was a multicultural country, the same as we have multicultural countries now. And it wasn't the tribe of Judah that were ruling, as it were. Herod, the so-called great, he wasn't from the tribe of Judah. He was an Edomite. He was a Canaanite. And he put Canaanites in all the top positions. He put Canaanites as high priests. In actual fact, he killed the rightful high priest. And as we know, he killed the massacre of the innocents, because he wanted to kill anyone that had any claim to being the rightful king as well. So he killed lots of people off, put Canaanites in their place. And the genuine tribe of Judah and the tribe of Benjamin, they followed Christ. And these Canaanite Edomites didn't follow Christ. And they rejected Christ, and I believe Christ rejected them. But the traditional view is that they rejected Christ. When they rejected Christ, they rejected the Logos. They rejected the order of the universe. So they became agents of revolution, agents of chaos, constantly trying to overturn the order of the world, the order of the universe, the moral order, everything. And ever since then, that's what they've done. They've been at the heart of all these revolutions, the French Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, the revolutions in Spain, in Mexico. They're constantly trying to start revolutions. And what they did after the Romans kicked them out of Jerusalem, they really cornered the market in moneylending and usury. And Christians were not allowed to use usury. And the Jews have used usury as a weapon against Christians. They were actually kept out of Britain until 1066, when they came in with William the Conqueror. And up until that point, we had no usury in Britain, and we had no Jews in Britain. As soon as they came into Britain, they started lending money at interest. And there was also cases of ritual slaughter of Christian children, which is why they were expelled in 1290. So they've got this hatred of Christians. They've got this hatred of Christianity, which goes back to the time when their temple was destroyed. They hate Christians. They hate Christianity. So they've got a chip on their shoulder for that. And they obviously, if you look at the Talmud, it tells them that they should be ruling the world. And it doesn't tell them that they should obey God and that's how they'll rule the world. It tells them material ways to cheat the goyim, basically. It tells them that they can lie to us, they can steal from us, they don't have to keep their vows, all these sorts of things. And they cornered the market in usury. And basically the Pope, because they allowed the Jews to practice usury in Christian countries, the Pope ended up redefining what usury meant. So instead of it meaning any interest on whatever, it actually said it only included biting interest that was biting. And he did this so that Christians could also engage in money lending to compete with the Jews. So soon after that, we end up with Jews taking over the Bank of England, being given the Bank of England, and that is the reason why the British Empire took off. It's because the Jews had control of this Bank of England, and the Bank of England became the model for central banks everywhere, which were run by Jews. Now, if you control the money of a country, then you control everything, pretty much. And soon they had control of the printing presses, and they had a hand in the Protestant Reformation. And what they were doing is they were printing Bibles with questionable translations in them that highlighted the Jews, saying, using the word Jew before Jews even existed. describing Abraham as a Jew, describing Moses as a Jew, describing Isaac as a Jew, all this sort of thing, which was basically they were trying to take over this role of the Israelites in the Old Testament, trying to get Christians to associate them with this role. Whereas up until then, Christians had called them Talmudists. In actual fact, if you look back at the history books in Britain that are talking about the Vikings, they call the Vikings the Gentiles. And this is before there were any Jews in Britain. So obviously the British people saw themselves as Israel and saw the Vikings and the Saxons as Gentiles. They certainly didn't think that the word Gentile meant non-Jew. But that's another word that's been changed by the Jews. And because the Christians thought, the modern day, or the later Christians thought that these Jews were actually the people of the Old Testament, when they converted to Christianity, they were given an important role. They were promoted to positions like bishops. And of course, then they were able to inject their poison into Christianity. They were also looked to help with the translations. As I say, they put in lots of dodgy translations. Even though the King James Version is the best Bible to get, it still has questionable translations. And they went on from controlling the printing presses to buying up all the newspapers, buying up all the media, until we get to around about the time of the 1900s. And they're controlling the majority of the publications by that time. This is why they were able to, when World War II came about, they were able to unite together the Jews in America, the Jews in Britain, Jews everywhere, with their newspapers, were able to tell a full story of what was going on in Germany. And by this time, they'd also managed to get themselves into government. Up until the French Revolution, Jews didn't have the same civil rights as everybody else. They weren't allowed to own businesses. They weren't allowed to buy up businesses. They weren't allowed into government. They weren't allowed to have public roles such as teachers. But the French Revolution, under Napoleon, he emancipated the Jews and gave them the same rights as us. And from there followed the emancipation of the Jew in America, in Russia, in Britain. And in Britain, the Jews still couldn't actually become members of Parliament. And what they did, they lobbied to allow them in, because we used to have an oath. To join Parliament, you used to have to take an oath to uphold the laws of the Christian Bible. And obviously the Jews cannot take that oath. They do actually say a prayer once every year to absolve them of all their oaths so that they can lie under oath. But I guess they thought that it was a little bit too much to be lying under oath to join Parliament. So they lobbied to get that law changed so that instead of taking an oath to uphold the laws of the Christian Bible, they just took an oath to not under God and not obey the laws of the Bible, but I think it was just to obey the laws of the land, something like that. And at first, the British government refused to allow this. And what they did, they just continued lobbying. They lobbied the next government, whatever it was, Labour or Conservative, still couldn't get it through. And after about 20 years, they managed to get this bill passed so that Jews could actually get into Parliament. And then we had Jews in the government. And we had Jews in the government in Britain. We had Jews in the government in Germany. We had Jews in the government in America. And this is the reason why America was brought into the First World War. Because Germany was winning. And these Jews said to Britain, they said, look, if you give us Palestine for our homeland, we'll bring the Jews in America. The American Jews will bring America into the war and you'll win the war against Germany. So Britain said, okay, we'll give you Palestine. And that's what the Balfour Declaration was. The Americans came into the First World War. We won the war. Germany lost. And the Jews were given Palestine. Now, at the end of the First World War, you had the Versailles Treaty, which basically chopped Germany up into little pieces and set the scene ready for World War II. But at the actual meeting for the Versailles Treaty, where you had all these different countries there deciding what to do, every single one of those countries that were there, the representative that they had with them, the advisor that they had with them, was a Jewish advisor. And what that meant was that everything that was done to benefit the Jews. All these different countries that had their Jewish advisor there thought that the Jew was there to get what's best for them. But in actual fact, the Jew always does what's best for the Jew. I mean, that it just comes naturally. It should come naturally to everyone to do what's best for your people. And what the Jews have done today is advocate this idea of globalism, that we must be doing what's best for everybody else and not taking care of our own interests, so that they can get away with doing what's best for their own interests without people being suspicious of it. So the Versailles Treaty basically served the Jews, because they were the ones there advising every politician that was there. I mean, it's quite incredible. The Pope was banned from being there, of course. So after the war, when the Gentiles refused to all get together, the workers of the world unite and have a revolution and turn the whole world into communism, when they realized that that wasn't going to work and the proletariat wasn't going to rise up, they decided that they needed another way to attack the Western world, to overturn it. And they came up with cultural Marxism. And of course, I forgot to say there, but obviously communism itself was thought up by Karl Marx, who's obviously a Jew, and communism itself, the Bolsheviks, about 90% of the leadership were all Jews. And the ones that weren't Jews had Jewish wives. So the communist revolution, the Bolshevik revolution, was a Jewish affair. It was Jews taking over the USSR, basically. And they wanted to take over the world. They've always wanted to take over the world. That's what it tells them, that the world will be theirs and all the property of the Gentiles will be theirs, according to the Talmud. So when the proletarian revolution failed to happen, they got together and thought, well, we're going to have to think about something else. What can we do? And they thought about this in a think tank called the Frankfurt School, that started off in Germany. And when Hitler came to power, they left and went to America. And these Jews that were in the Frankfurt School, they thought, well, what we have to do is we have to start criticizing Western culture in any way that we can. And we'll put it in the terms that this is how we can prevent fascism. We can prevent fascism from happening again. We can prevent World War II from happening again by splitting up the family, by promoting homosexuality, by promoting deviancy, and all these ways that hurt Western culture and that hurt Western man. And we'll say that this is good for the world because there won't be any more war. I mean, I'm basically simplifying this here. And they came out with a book called The Authoritarian Personality, which was saying that fascism is all based upon the father's role in the family, because the father is the authoritarian figure. So families that have responsible fathers, those children are being indoctrinated into a mindset that predisposes them to fascism. So what we have to do is we have to split up the family. These are the genuine ideas that they were promoting. And you also had this guy Kinsey, this other Jew, who was doing research into sex. And he basically divorced sex from the idea that it's two people getting together to create a child, to it's just two people together to have a bit of fun. And they don't need to have any connection. They don't need to have made any vows. They don't need to stay together. They don't need to be the same sex. And he even falsified reports. Well, he even did tests on children. And he abused children, this guy Kinsey. And he falsified reports. And his work was promoted by these Jews, which was responsible for the sexual revolution. In there, you get this idea that 1 in 10 people are homosexual. 10% of the population are homosexual, all this sort of thing. And the other thing that these Jews in the Frankfurt School worked out when they were looking for their alternative to the proletariat, they thought, well, what we can do, we can promote ethnic minorities. We can promote minorities. We can give them money. We can tell them that they're being oppressed by the majority, and we can encourage them to rebel, and we'll use them as our proxy proletariat. Which is, of course, what they did. And if you look at the black advocacy groups going back 100 years, you will see that they were all led by Jews. They weren't actually led by Negroes. They were led by Jews. Eventually, they got sick of this, but not until about the 70s or the 80s. Eventually they got sick of the fact that they were being run by Jews. Louis Farrakhan was the one that really tipped them off to that. Just look at Martin Luther King, who was promoted by them, who again was a communist. He was part of the Communist Party. So they promoted the blacks. Then they promoted the homosexuals. They promoted the homosexual movement. Then they promoted the gay marriage movement. And it was all about attacking the pillars of Western civilization, attacking the family, attacking marriage, just degrading everything. And of course, at the same time, they were promoting pornography in films. You had this Catholic organization that did very well at preventing Hollywood from putting all this filth on the big screen, on the cinema screens. And eventually they ended up turning over this Catholic censorship movement, and they ended up allowing pornography in films that were at the cinema. And of course, then they also lobbied to allow full-on hardcore pornography for adults as well. And they argued that it was under free speech. And of course, that really did degrade the nation once they were putting that stuff out. If you read E. Michael Jones' book, Libido Dominandi, or if you listen to any of his lectures, he quite often brings it up that when the country Israel was invading Lebanon, one of the first things they did was jam the television station and start broadcasting pornography to all the people in Lebanon. And they did this to distract them, to distract the men. And what this does is it makes it quite clear that pornography is a weapon. It's not a benefit to us. It's a weapon. It means that the men are constantly distracted and they don't realize what's really being done to them. So there are all these basic ways of them attacking Western civilization and attacking Western man. And at the same time, they were promoting miscegenation, promoting this idea that America was a melting pot. There was no difference between white and black. Up until about the 1930s, we had a proper racial science that looked at the different races, measured their skulls, measured their IQs, looked at the differences between their organs and documented the differences. And the Jews started promoting the idea that race was just a social construct. There was no difference. And that it was just nasty people wanting to prevent two people that love each other from having sex or getting married that prevented miscegenation and these miscegenation laws. And obviously these miscegenation laws were for the benefit of the children. So that there wasn't people created with no heritage, no ancestry, nobody that looks like them in their past and a totally shattered genome. That's what the anti-miscegenation laws were for. The Jews pushed the idea that it was a crime against love. The same as they pushed the idea that it's just two people that love each other should be allowed to marry even if they're the same gender. Never mind the fact that marriage is actually the act of marriage and two men cannot carry out the act of marriage, all they can do is sodomize one another. So what that's done is basically lower marriage, the act of marriage, consummating the marriage. They've lowered that to meaning the same thing as sodomy now. So instead of the act of producing life, you've got just about the most degrading thing you could possibly ever do, putting your genitals in the most degrading part of the body. And this is black magic. But this is obviously another subject. At the same time as doing this, they were promoting immigration. It was the East European Jews that came to America that pushed for changes in the Immigration Act in the 20s. Up until that point, it had just been people from Northern Europe. And obviously, the American Constitution talks about our posterity. This constitution and these laws are only meant to be for our posterity. They're only meant to be for the white race. And the Jews pushed for there to be open immigration so that anybody could come into America. And they didn't just do this in America. It started in America. They also did it in Australia, New Zealand, anywhere that has had Jews. They have been at the forefront of pushing for open borders, and allowing immigration into that country. And the reason why they do this is because they believe that it makes the Jews safer, because they no longer stand out so much. All the while you've got a white country and it has Jews in it, it's very easy to tell who the Jews are. If you've got a multicultural country, which has lots of different races within it, it becomes very difficult to tell who the Jews are. And most people think that the Jews are white because there is so much diversity around. So the Jews think that this actually makes them safer. At the same time, they obviously like it so much when white people mix with black, because it means that the offspring are no longer white. And this goes back to a war that's been going on since after the flood. And if you read in the Bible, it talks about the Tower of Babel, and the Tower of Babel was a multicultural tower, and the people were interbreeding. So what God did, he confounded all the languages, so people could no longer speak to each other in the same language, which meant that they couldn't get together and miscegenate any longer, and they had to split up and move away. So this idea of encouraging miscegenation to destroy the white race, it goes right the way back to the Tower of Babel. And what does the European Union Center in Strasbourg, what does it look like? It's basically the Tower of Babel. It's a famous painting of the Tower of Babel, is what it's modeled upon. So the Jews are pushing for immigration. They've pushed for pornography. They control the banks. They control usury. And all these things are harmful to white people, extremely harmful to white people. So how do they get white people to accept these things? Well, they also control the television. As we said before, they control Hollywood. And we didn't talk too much about that, but the Germans were actually the leaders in movie making. And if you look at the films that they made during the Third Reich, they made really wholesome, moral movies. They wouldn't allow anybody to be seen to be dying on the screen, for instance. They wanted their movies to educate their people and uplift their people. After the war, the Jews bought out basically any German or American producers in Hollywood. They completely took over Hollywood, which is why that's so degenerate. But they also control the television. They also control the television series, which is why kids are programmed with the idea that they should be accepting homosexuality, they should be accepting miscegenation. They should be selfish. They should just be out for themselves. And they should think that it's quite normal to be brought up by two males, or to be brought up in a broken home. The Jews are at the forefront of all these things because it just comes naturally to them. And you can look at it in a spiritual way and you can say, well, they're here to tempt us. That's what they're here for. And we are here as white people. We are here to resist that temptation, and to show our value to God, to show our veracity and that we hold to the truth. What's the good in being a good person if you're not given a chance to show that you are a good person? So you can look at it as that's what the Jews are here for. They're here to tempt us, and we're here to resist that temptation. So they're here to strengthen us. I mean, Adolf Hitler talked in Mein Kampf about my struggle. And it's the struggle that improves us. And if we didn't have these Jews here, then we wouldn't really know who we really are. We wouldn't really have matured and know just what we are capable of. We have to have something to struggle against. So that's the role that they actually play spiritually. And the way to deal with it, and we're not in a position to remove all these peoples from our countries. We're not in a position to take over government. We don't have a lot of strength as nationalists, but what we can do is we can take control over our individual lives, and we can reject the Jews' temptations in our individual lives. The way we can do that, we can make sure that we don't get any credit, for instance, make sure that we just use debit, that we just use a debit card. That way we're not contributing to the system of usury. Make sure that when we spend our money, that it just goes to white people. Think about where your money is actually going, so that it doesn't go to enrich non-whites. It doesn't go to enrich Jews. Make sure that your friends are all white. Make sure that they know about the truth about history, about what's really going on, what's really behind the wars that are going on in the world. Obviously, we haven't talked about the wars that are going on, but these wars in Syria, particularly, is just for the benefit of Israel. And everybody you speak to says, well, why? I don't understand why we are involved in Syria. Well, the reason why we are involved in Syria is because it's right next to Israel. And Syria supports Palestine. So Israel wants to wipe Syria out. Israel wants to take over that little stretch of land, which also ties in with an Old Testament prophecy, which they just use as an excuse because they pretend to be from the Old Testament. They think, well, we can use that as an excuse to take over this bit of land as well. So the wars are down to Israel, the war in Iraq, getting rid of Gaddafi in Libya because he spoke out against the Jews, and because they want to take over the central banks. They want to have their new world order. So just because the Jews aren't out there leading grooming gangs, just because they're not out there robbing white people at knife point, they have played an extremely important role in facilitating all of that. I mean, we haven't even got into laws against criticizing the Jews. Laws against criticizing the Jews came first, and then there were laws against criticizing any race. And this whole idea of racism being a thing, and that it being wrong to care for your own people more than anyone else, that's a Jewish idea that comes from the Jews. The anti-Semitic laws, the hate speech laws, the anti-racism laws, they're all there just to benefit Jews. And we can see this when people start criticizing Palestine, Israel, for their actions against the Palestinians. You can see that these laws, they're not meant for the Jews, they're just meant for the Gentiles. They're just there because they benefit the Jews. Okay, well, I've gone a little bit over time, but I hope that explains it for whoever it was that came in the chat room and asked for me to do this episode, and for others that have recently come to Radio Aryan and might want to know how the Jews fit into the problems that we struggle against as nationalists. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I do hope you all have a great weekend. I will be back on Monday with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.